Our weekly fantasy sports podcast on Breakfast with Benz with Jeff Erickson from RotoWire, best fantasy analyst in the business, best fantasy site in the business. It's RotoWire. Jeff, your Reds coming to PNC Park to take on the surprisingly hot Pittsburgh Pirates. What should we expect from the Reds, and what can fantasy players expect from the Reds? Not much of late, huh?
No, not a whole lot. The Reds offense is about as moribund as you'd expect when you look at that lineup. It's not a great lineup. The last 2 days been shut out by the Rays. They did put up 8 on them on Monday, but for the most part, whenever they hit well, they're a function of that ballpark for the most part. They still don't have Joey Votto. None of their touted prospects are up yet. It's Jonathan India, basically, and hope for the best otherwise.
You mentioned being a function of the ballpark when they hit. They only have 15 homers still, though, right? I mean, I believe they're second to last in the National League when it comes to home runs in front of just Washington.
Right. And I was remiss in not mentioning Tyler Stevenson. He's a solid bat. But, I mean, you just look at that, the names in that lineup, TJ Friedl, Stuart Fairchild. These are guys that nobody expects to be a regular, everyday Major League Baseball regular. Jason Vossler, another one. Jose Barrero. You know, your old friend for you, Kevin Newman, is a fine, you know, utility player, but he's not an everyday starter. All their top prospects are still in the minors. Ellie De La Cruz just got activated from the minor league IL. They've got a number of Matt McClain will be coming at some point. They've got a number of guys that will be knocking down that door eventually. They're just not there yet.
With the Pirates, Andrew McCutchen, Carlos Santana are two guys that everybody's buzzing about here, especially with the absence of O'Neill Cruz. The veterans have stepped up and gotten off to nice starts. What's the fantasy buzz about those guys?
Well, we were just talking a good bit about McCutchen today on the SiriusXM show. It's interesting. He's not striking out as much. He's only 12.5% K percentage. He's running, which is nice. And he ran
the running, and you're right, the walk rate. I believe it's 11-9 walks to strikeouts right now for him.
Yeah, helps that they just had a series in Coors Field. That's always good for your numbers. Usually not so good for the pitchers. I think the real interesting Pittsburgh story is your pitcher yesterday, Johan Oviedo, really turned a corner there. I didn't have the courage to start him in leagues where I picked him up because it's, Coors Field, but six solid, strong innings, striking out a lot of batters, really kind of turned over that pitch mix, and then he may have something there.
Boy, Coors Field, we alluded to this last week, Jeff, but it's worth reiterating this week after that first 1-0 game to start the season. It's gone right back to being Coors Field, and it sure looks like the Denver Mile High air is aiding the problems that already exist for the pitching staff for Colorado, is it not?
Yeah, and Marquez is on the IL there, too. That, you know, they haven't had Daniel Bard all year. It's a bad roster, a team that doesn't seem to have a sense of direction. It's kind of frustrating there. They're not in rebuild mode, but they're certainly not in contention mode either there. Chris Bryant finally homered there that series. That was the first Coors Field homer since he signed prior to last season. He missed a lot of time last year, but he also struggled to hit for power. So at least they've got that turning around for them. But they're a franchise that just kind of just spinning its wheels.
Any fantasy angled reaction to Bumgarner being DFA'd?
It's about time. You know, you could see it yesterday. And, you know, it's one thing to be ineffective. It's another thing to be all salty too at the same time. I mean,
though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is him, but it's endearing and funny when he's dominant, when he's good, when he's getting pasted like this. There's nothing endearing about that there. Interesting to me that they're calling up Tommy Henry and not Brandon Pfaadt to take his spot in the rotation for now. I think that changes. Pfaadt's the prospect. Pfaadt is how you spell his last name. They've got another prospect at shortstop, Jordan Lawler. You're going to see at some point,
Jordan Lawler was actually a discussion point for the Pirates when they had the number one overall pick. I remember his name being thrown around a little bit.
Absolutely. And you'll see him at some point, not this year likely, but in the long run, on the pitching, but it's all about, you know, can they get the good young pitching they develop? Can Pfaadt develop? Tonight they're starting Ryne Nelson against the Padres in Tatis's first game of the year. You know, he's been just okay so far. What can they get out of him? You know, they got another kid, Dre Jameson, who pitched Tuesday in St. Louis. Okay. Outing there, didn't go deep. Control's an issue for him. They're going to go through some growing pains with these guys. There's a high ceiling, but there's also a pretty low floor.
Jeff Erickson with us. It is our fantasy sports podcast. I'd like to throw two names at you from our region, Jeff. Local WPIAL players, Whitfield guys that faced off yesterday in the Oakland-Chicago game. Ian Happ, who had 9 RBIs on the Cubs road trip. He's hot. Just signed a big contract. I think he's hitting 323 right now. And the guy who pitched is a Bethel Park kid from right around here, Mason Miller. A lot of buzz about him coming up. Any fantasy interest in this young pitcher for what is still technically now the Oakland Athletics? We'll see soon when they're going to Vegas.
Yeah, another big story there too. Mason Miller is this week's flavor of the week in terms of starting pitcher call-up. And I say that in a good way. He is the buzzy guy, the guy that everybody is talking about. Great ability to miss bats. The franchise is going to drag him down though. For sure. Even if he pitches well, the bullpen comes in and gets torched like they did yesterday. You see a lot of that happening there. It's going to be, it's hard to chase wins on losing franchise. And unfortunately, in our fantasy games, for the most part, that matters a ton. And I also am a little bit concerned about him being able to go deep into games. He missed 5 months of the season last year with a shoulder issue. He's not super young. So that's something that to keep in mind. But if you're looking for something positive to look for out of the A's, he's it. He's someone that's interesting. Shea Langeliers is interesting. They got a lot of problems on that franchise, though, too. And we've said this about like 5 different teams already here, Tim.
Yeah.
It just shows like the gap between the haves and the have-nots. And don't make this a market thing. It's a competence thing. It's a trying thing in many cases. But there's a big gulf right now between the teams that are trying and the teams that are not.
Jeff, what else are you looking at from a fantasy perspective, baseball-wise, before we get to the NFL draft a little bit?
Fernando Tatis comes back today after serving his 20-game suspension. The Padres desperately need his bat. They are really struggling offensively. We spent a good amount of time on Tuesday talking about Juan Soto and his continued low performance with the Padres. He didn't hit well with the Padres after the trade last year. He hasn't hit well this year. Had a long homer yesterday. Maybe that'll kind of kick him into gear a little bit. Tatis coming back, maybe that sheds a little less spotlight on him. Allows him to produce better. But the Padres need to get those bats going. It's kind of interesting that the Diamondbacks are in first place, the only team in the NL West that is above 500 right now. The Dodgers are 9-10. The Padres are 9-11.
What about Scherzer and the sticky stuff?
Yeah, big deal there. It's a big deal because it's an automatic suspension. There's no way for him to beat it, I don't think. I know there's some mitigating circumstances, namely the home plate umpire, Phil Cuzzi, is the only guy that's thrown anybody out with this, the sticky stuff. He's done 3 times in 3 years. Scherzer argued that the substance on the glove was resin, which is allowed. There's a certain level that is allowed, supposedly, too. I don't think he wins any sort of appeal, but we'll see. If so, you're going to miss a 2-start week, which is going to be pretty good next week.
Jeff, let's get to the draft, or more specifically, setting up for the draft here in Pittsburgh. The Steelers addressed a need to a degree. We'll see with Allen Robinson coming here. What do you think he's going to provide, if anything? I know a big if is thrown on this because of his foot injury, getting the screw placed in his foot and all. He did have 14 touchdowns once. I know that was many moons ago. He's not going to get 14 here, but you know what? Even if he had 2, actually, if he had 1 of the remaining wide receivers not named George Pickens, he would have led the Steelers in terms of touchdowns. Pickens had 4. No other receiver had 1 that remained. Claypool had 1 and then got traded.
I think that's a reflection of the whole offense and not the receiving core, though. My friend Scott Pianowski from Yahoo always says when the milk goes sour, the milk stays sour. And unfortunately, I think that's where we're at with Robinson. It costs the Steelers nothing. A pick upgrade in the 7th round, and they have to take on some of his contract. Not much of it, even. So it's one of those, okay, let's kick the tires. Let's see. And let's not kick them too hard because that might hurt. Let's see what they have in him. It can't hurt to give him a shot. He won't be on I need to see something before he's going to be on any of my rosters, though.
Agreed there. I just think if you're trying to extrapolate this for what it might mean fantasy-wise, there very well may be another wide receiver that's available early in the 2nd round for someone, because the Steelers might not be tempted for, say, Zay Flowers or Downs from North Carolina or Tillman or somebody like that. Somewhere in the 2nd round, I could have seen them taking a guy like that if they had properly addressed tackle and corner, or if they decided that all the good tackles were gone and they're just going to have to wait. Maybe they roll the dice and get that third wide receiver that could be more dynamic than Robinson. Maybe that guy goes somewhere else now.
Yeah, I think that's possible. Maybe they wait to the third or fourth round to address it. You know, second round receiver has been a pretty happy spot for the Steelers, but we'll see what happens there. This is a big year for Deontay Johnson, obviously, contract-wise, career-wise, coming off of what he did last year. I wonder, do they kind of take the shackles off Kenny Pickett a little bit more after kind of keeping him very in a very conservative mindset all season?
Well, that's the most
year.
Interesting thing in the whole soup for the Steelers. Yeah. We could talk about draft picks and bolstering the offensive line, maybe bolstering the defensive line. The biggest story going is when they give Kenny Pickett more to do, how does he do it? That's the entirety of the storyline for the Steelers this year, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the whole division's a little weird this year. Baltimore, we still don't know what's going to happen with Lamar. They caught out Odell Beckham, who hasn't played since the Super Bowl against the Bengals, and you know, coming off a second torn ACL. I mean, what's he going to look like? Big question mark there. The Browns, I mean, they feel like they have everything together, but Deshaun Watson looked good in like one game since going over. Now, granted, he was coming off a long layoff, so they're counting on everything kind of going right this year. They've quietly had a pretty decent offseason, but I don't know. I mean, I think there's room for improvement from the Steelers, and it wouldn't be that difficult to see them winning 10 or 11 games, but they need some things to go right, too.
Tight end wise, I've heard a lot of starters and a lot of production can come out of this rookie class. That's going to be interesting to see when fantasy drafts roll around, how many people have faith in these rookie tight ends, because there's a big batch of them that might get drafted higher than the usual tight end class does.
That's probably a mistake. I think you'll see maybe one of them kind of step up, but let's be honest, the track record of rookie tight ends isn't that strong. Young tight ends, it's a difficult position to jump right in and be very productive right from the word go. So I'm a little skeptical. Like, the Bengals could be one of those teams that drafts a rookie tight end in the first round. But they signed Irv Smith, and I think Irv Smith is probably the starter over whoever rookie they draft, unless they spend a first round pick on that run. The Bengals do have a history of spending first round picks on tight ends, though. Like, if you remember Tyler Eifert as an example of a guy that they were willing to go for, they've gone that way before. So you could see it happening.
I saw an article in The Athletic this week, Jeff, inferring that the Bengals might have a specific interest in a slot receiver, and maybe Tyler Boyd's end is coming in Cincinnati because of all the other money that they might have to throw at wide receiver.
Yeah, I've seen that as a possibility as well. I think it probably doesn't happen this year, but we'll see. I think Joe Mixon is as good as gone. I think that's one where you'll have to wait till June, but I think he's probably gone.
Last thing, do you feel better or just as bad or worse about Carolina skill position players if Young's the quarterback?
I didn't like them including DJ Moore in the deal to go get that pick. I mean, I guess it was required to get it done, but I would have liked to have seen him stay around, because I mean, I know they've added like Hayden Hurst, and they've added all these like tier three guys, I feel like, which is maybe better than what they had in some instances, but I feel like they're still a little behind me. It's a new, you know, coaching staff begins anew this offseason. New coaching staff. It's not Matt Rhule's offense anymore. We'll see. Maybe Frank Reich will put it all together and it'll look pretty good.
Jeff, what's going on at RotoWire this week? Tell us what people can find there. Are you dabbling in any postseason fantasy hockey, basketball, golf? What's happening with some of the other sports?
So we got loads of draft coverage, obviously. You can check that all out. I do a little thing with my buddy Tim Schuler from RotoWire. We do a draft of teams for every playoff, every sports playoffs. So you have a little skin in the game, and that we do have like DFS coverage for and betting help coverage on the site for each play for both hockey and basketball, if you want to check that out. But you know, I'm watching a little closely. You know, I got my certain teams that I'm backing and all that. It's been wild to see all the road wins hockey playoffs so far.
Yeah, it sure has, and I think that's going to continue, but we'll see. Certainly interesting to watch that Minnesota game with ex-Penguins very much woven into that game, even though they lost with Gaudreau and Oscar Sundquist. I'm thinking, man, they they probably could have had a role in the third and fourth line for Pittsburgh this year. And then, of course, but Fleury blew up in net and gave up 7 goals. So what are you going to do? All right, Jeff, we'll catch up again next week. And we'll see. We'll do this Wednesday or Thursday in advance of the draft. And people will, I'm sure, consume all the draft coverage that you point out at RotoWire.
All right. And you can check that all out. RotoWire.com/free. Get you a free peek behind the paywall.
Jeff Erickson from RotoWire.